Let's continue with our look at the day of Jesus' atonement. When we were last together, we were talking about his betrayal and arrest in the Garden of Gethsemane, which was located on the western slope of the Mount of Olives, which is on the east side of the Temple Mount. He was arrested by a temple police force contingent, all Jewish guys. There are no Romans involved in this story just yet. This arrest party will take him bound back across town to the west, up to the high priest's residence, which appears to be in the high city, the western hill of the city of Jerusalem. And he will be interviewed before members of the Sanhedrin to get some sense of what they will officially charge him and try him for as soon as the sun comes up. And they will do that at their official council chamber on the Temple Mount or near the Temple Mount. And so the arrest party is under orders, apparently, to bring Jesus first to Annas. Now, I want you to understand, Annas was the first high priest appointed by the Romans whenever the Romans took control of Judea and Samaria and Idumea. He has since been replaced by subsequent official high priests. But Annas is a powerful person and a powerful personality, and he becomes a sort of godfather to the high priestly families, and he manages to get several of his sons and one of his son-in-laws appointed by the Romans to this position of leadership. The current high priest, Joseph Caiaphas, is his son-in-law. And while Joseph Caiaphas is the official high priest, Annas is still the power. And so the Gospel of John, chapter 18, verse number 12, that's where we're going to start, begins with the understanding that Jesus is taken to Annas first. Now, it appears to me that all of this is happening at the same high priest residence, which would have been pretty good sized. It would have been a wealthy person's Mediterranean-style home. It has a central courtyard, perhaps with a very nice pool in it. This courtyard is going to be open up to the sky. And then around it are the actual buildings of this residence. Some of the rooms are for meeting and eating and relaxing, and others are for resting and places for the servants to live and do all of their work. So it's a fairly decent-sized complex for the city of Jerusalem. We know it has two stories to it, because that will come into the text that we'll be reading in a little bit. So it appears to me as if this arrest party arrives at the single entry gate to this residence and is then admitted into the complex. And the first place that they go to is a private meeting with Annas. Now, Peter, we'll discover, is left outside the front gate to begin with. He's not allowed entrance, while John, the apostle, seems to be permitted entrance because he's known to the staff of this residence. I'll talk more about why that is the case in a little bit. So John chapter 18, verse 12. So the band of soldiers, don't think Romans, think temple police force, Jewish soldiers. So the band of soldiers and their captain and the officers of the Jews arrested Jesus and bound him. First, they led him to Annas, for he was the father-in-law of Caiaphas, who was high priest that year. So Caiaphas is the high priest according to Roman documents, Roman reality. But for Jewish mindset, Annas is the big guy. Verse 14, a little reminder from John about this. It was Caiaphas who had advised the Jews that it would be expedient for one man that he should die for the people. And that was the wording that the Holy Spirit kind of manipulated out of Joseph Caiaphas, that Jesus was basically going to be the atoning sacrifice for sin. John commented on that already. Now, verse 15. Simon Peter followed Jesus, and so did another disciple. Now, it would appear that this other disciple is John. It is had been long thought, and I agree with this thinking, is that John, in writing his gospel, does not want to name himself. And so he does little side mentions about another disciple, or the disciple whom Jesus loved. So Simon Peter is right there behind Jesus. Apparently, after he'd run away briefly, he was like right back following the arrest party across town. Since that disciple, apparently John, was known to the high priest. Now, why is he known to the high priest? Some people have suggested it is because he supplied the fish as a fisherman to the high priest's household. My response to that is, well, then why wasn't Simon Peter known to the high priest? Because he was involved in the exact same business. It was Peter, Andrew, James, John, Zebedee, the father of James and John, that was involved in this fishing business. So that doesn't track for me. But this other thing does. There is a long-standing tradition, it arose very early, that James and John were priests, were of a priestly family. Now, it doesn't matter that they're fishermen. It doesn't matter that their father Zebedee is a fisherman, because that doesn't automatically say that they couldn't be priests. Because the way the priesthood worked with the Jewish people, thanks to David through the power of the Holy Spirit, was that all priests belonged to priestly divisions or groups. These groups would serve on a rotating schedule, 1 week at a time, and effectively twice a year, because there were 24 courses. The rest of the year, they had other jobs. Now, true, many of them had jobs that were related to ministry. Some of them were in synagogues, others were teachers, others were rabbis, but in this case, apparently, this family, this priestly family, were fishermen. So I believe it's because they were part of the priestly families that they are known to the high priest. Now, there are plenty of priestly families, so that doesn't guarantee the high priest knows you. So in this case, I think they must have been fairly prominently placed within the priestly community. I think that they were probably fairly well-to-do as fishing business leaders. And because of this, the high priest had an interest in them. So much so that the staff at the residence in Jerusalem can recognize John the Apostle on sight and give him entrance immediately. He is an authorized person. So again, back to the text. Since the disciple was known to the high priest, he entered with Jesus into the court of the high priest. He was automatically allowed in. But Peter stood outside at the door, because you see, he is not on the authorized list. So the other disciple who was known to the high priest went out and spoke to the servant girl who kept watch at the door and brought Peter in. Now, these are secure complexes, and so there is always somebody on duty to decide who gets in or not. Now, when it says servant girl here, our tendency is to think that she is young, but that is not a guarantee. in the language, it just means she's female. My suspicion is that she is likely an older, responsible servant, and that she is controlling access to the facility. And so John goes to her and says, he's with me, or I vouch for him. You can let him in. He is safe. And that's how Peter gets access. But he does not get access without first being challenged with a question. Verse 17, the servant girl at the door said to Peter, you also are not one of this man's disciples, are you? Now notice the also there. That tells us she already understood that John was one of the followers of Jesus. And even though she may not have agreed with that, he is still on the authorized list, and she let him in. But when she looks at Peter and John's vouched for him, her assumption then is, what, are you like one of his disciples too? Really? That sort of question. And this is the first time we see Peter fulfilling the denial prophecy that Jesus had made just a couple of hours earlier. He said back to her, I am not. Now, of course, he is, but he does not want to be in trouble, especially since he just whacked off one of the high priest's servant's ears. Even though Jesus healed the man, Peter is still probably quite concerned that there may be consequences for attacking the guy in the first place. Now, we're not done with this lady. I want you to keep her in mind because she will pop up again in a little bit. Now, the rest of John's story here says that Peter, the servants and the officers had made a charcoal fire because it was cold. It's wee morning hours, maybe 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, probably 3 or maybe 3:30. And it's the very beginning of April, so it's going to be chilly. And so they were standing and they were warming themselves, and Peter also was standing and warming himself. So everybody's kind of huddled around the fire in the courtyard that I told you about in this complex. And what are they doing? Well, they're waiting. Here's the testimony from Matthew's gospel. Matthew 26:58. Peter was following him at a distance, as far as the courtyard of the high priest. So that's the story of where he was outside. And then going inside, he sat with the guards to see the end. The end of what? The end of the situation. All of them are waiting to see how this plays out with Jesus being put on trial by the high priest and his Sanhedrin. We are going to have to split our time back and forth between what's going on inside and what's going on outside. Because outside, there is Peter, and he's around the guards. He's around the attendants of the household. And they're all awake and waiting for this Messiah character, this Messiah claimant, because that's the way some of them are looking at it, to be charged for making such false claims. And so Peter is kind of like in the middle of enemy territory. Now, at this point, in Matthew 26:69, I want to jump ahead in the Matthew passage because I think this happened pretty quickly during the story. It says, now Peter was sitting outside in the courtyard. So there he is. He's been standing around, and now he's sitting. And a servant girl came up to him, not the same one that was at the gate. This is somebody else. Perhaps she's there making sure that all the little details are taken care of for those that are up and awake waiting for this procedure to get taken care of. So a servant girl came up to him. And what happens is she kind of just stares at him for a while. This is Luke chapter 22, verse 56 now. 56. Then a servant girl, seeing him as he sat in the light and looking closely at him. So she doesn't immediately say anything. She just kind of sits there looking at his face in the firelight from the charcoal brazier. A little bit more detail brought in from Mark chapter 14, 66. It says, as Peter was below in the courtyard. So this is where we find out it's a two-story complex. And Jesus' trial, his preliminary hearing before the Sanhedrin, is taking place in a meeting room up on the second story, which probably has a balcony to it that overlooks the courtyard. That'll come in later. So Peter is down on ground level around this fire, and the trial is going on upstairs. So Peter was below in the courtyard, and one of the servant girls of the high priest came, and seeing Peter warming himself, so you can hear all the same details in three of these Gospels, she looked at him and said, you also were with the Nazarene, with Jesus. Matthew says, you also were with Jesus, the Galilean. So those are both directed to Peter himself. Now, in the Luke account that we're also looking at, it says that she said, this man also was with him. So she tells Peter, I know you were there. You're with this Nazarene. And then she goes, he's with him. He's one of them. And so she's bringing in the whole crew on looking closely at Peter as being one of the followers of Jesus. Now, what does it say that she said that he says back? Luke 22, 57. He denied it, saying, woman, I don't know him. In Matthew 26, 70. But he denied it before them all, saying, I don't know what you mean. Mark 14, verse number 68. But he denied it, saying, I neither know nor understand what you mean. So he makes the claim that he is totally ignorant of what's going on here. Now, immediately, you'd have to ask the question, well, what's he doing here? Why are you in the courtyard? Why are you hanging out in the middle of the night, you know, 3-4 o'clock in the morning? If you don't know him, you don't know anything about him. But this was a little bit too much attention to him. So he's going to leave that fire. And I think it's possible that there was a secondary inquiry to him in this whole instance that's recorded only in Luke 22:58. It says, and a little later, now how little later? Maybe just a few moments, maybe just a couple of minutes. Someone else said to him, you also are one of them. But Peter said, man, I am not. So he denies it vehemently that he is not a disciple of Jesus, that he doesn't know Jesus. He doesn't even know what these people are talking about. All right, now, in the Matthew passage, it says at this time, Matthew 26, 71, when he went out to the entrance, another servant girl saw him. So now he's gone back into the entry hallway, back out where he met that gate woman when he first came in. So this seems to be the same woman that was mentioned in our John account. Mark tells it as well. Mark 14, verse number 68, the finish of it. And then he went out into the gateway, and a rooster crowed. Now, this is very important to understand from the Gospel of Mark. Mark appears to be the recollections of Simon Peter, which John Mark wrote down. Peter distinctly remembers that Jesus said to him, "Before the cock crows twice, you will deny me thrice." So, two times for the rooster to crow, he'll have denied him on three separate occasions. Now, he'll say, "I don't know," more than three times, guaranteed. But we're talking about three separate instances. Now, this does help answer a question that is brought up from time to time. And that is, some people have suggested that the cock crowing that Jesus referred to was the beginning of the final watch of the night, starting around 3 o'clock in the morning. It was called cock crow, and that does seem to be the case. But if that was what Jesus was referring to, cock crow does not happen twice in the same night. So it appears to me very strongly that we're talking about a real rooster, and that Jesus was saying there's going to be two separate occasions that a rooster crows tonight, and you will have denied me three times before the second one happens. So Mark's gospel lets us know that after he got kind of accosted by the firelight, he leaves and goes out into the gateway again, and as he's walking that direction, he hears the rooster crow for the very first time. Now, that had to have maybe grabbed his attention, but he may have thought, well, that's just a coincidence. Roosters crow, especially as it's getting closer to morning. And then this, Mark 14:69, same thing that we just found in the Matthew account. The servant girl saw him. So this appears to be the door guard again. And began again to say to the bystanders, "This man is one of them." In the Matthew account, it says, "This man was with Jesus of Nazareth." So she's bearing testimony. "I saw him come in with Jesus. I let him in. He's a follower of Jesus, just like John is a follower of Jesus." And how does Peter react to this? Well, in the Matthew 26:72 account, it says, "And again, he denied it with an oath." So this time he says, "I swear before the name, I swear before heaven, I do not know the man." Verse number 70 of Mark 14, again, he denied it. So Peter has had two instances now of denying that he knows Jesus at all. Now, we're going to let him cool his heels there because we need to talk about what's going on inside the building, up on the second story. Remember, we've already had the mention of Annas. So let's first talk about what Annas talked with him about. John chapter 18, 19. The high priest, this is Annas, the big high priest, the godfather, then questioned Jesus about his disciples and his teaching. So he wants to know, who are your followers? What are you telling them? What are they believing? Verse 20, Jesus answered him, "I've spoken openly to the world. I have always taught in synagogues and in the temple, well, where all Jews come together. I have said nothing in secret." Now he is communicating here that his ministry is not covert. It's happening out in the public realm. The temple is a very public place. Synagogues are public places. He says, "I have not talked about anything in secret that you can't find out from my disciples, from my followers." Verse 21, "Why do you ask me? Ask those who have heard me what I said to them. They know what I said." This came off to one of the one of the guards or one of the attendants of Annas at this interview as smart alecky, disrespectful. So verse 22, when he had said these things, one of the officers standing by struck Jesus with his hand. So he slaps him. Now this is technically illegal because Jesus has not yet been truly charged with anything or condemned. Now he will be beat later at the command of the council. And that will be technically legal for them to do that because he's been condemned. But at this point, this is outside the bounds of propriety. It reminds me of the later story in the book of Acts of how Paul was brought before the council. And before he was charged, when he was trying to give answers, the high priest directed that he should be slapped. And he was, and his response was quite angry at first, but he basically said, how dare you cause me to be stricken in violation of the law? So that's where we're at here in the Jesus story. The question he asked him is that the way you answer the high priest? And so Jesus answered him, if what I said is wrong, then bear witness about the wrong. But if what I said is right, why do you strike me? So Jesus asked pretty much the same question. Why are you violating the rules of trial by striking me without giving testimony of what I said that was wrong? So Annas apparently doesn't feel he's going to get any more information out of him. So he now sends him on to the official high priest. Verse 24, Annas then sent him bound to Caiaphas the high priest. And so it will be that next procedure that we'll take up tomorrow when we get back into the Word.